Well, good morning. It's very good to see everybody here today. Please have your Bibles open to Ecclesiastes chapter 10 at this time. We're going to be going through that chapter in our first lesson this morning. So by way of introduction, I'll say something that should be rather obvious to us all, is that most of life is made up of very little things. Now, there are certainly big things in life as well, but most of life, the processes that we go through are made up of very little things. And sometimes they're good things, like the little things that we do to train for a marathon or keep a good diet or learn things in school or master a new skill or a new task. But there are other little things that can be very bad. Something as small as a germ that cannot be seen with the naked eye can make you sick for 5 days this last week, as was the case with me. Or something as small as finding a hair in your soup at the diner. So little things, whether they're good or bad, do leave an impact on our lives in very big ways. So if I could sum up Ecclesiastes chapter 10 in just a few words, I would say it is the chapter about very small things. So let's begin here in verse 1 of Ecclesiastes 10. This is in your Old Testament, by the way. If it's not a book that you're familiar with, it's after Psalms and Proverbs, about halfway through the Old Testament of the Bible. Ecclesiastes 10, verse 1 says, "Dead flies make a perfumer's oil stink, so a little foolishness is weightier than wisdom and honor." Verse 2, "A wise man's heart directs him toward the right, but the foolish man's heart directs him toward the left." Verse 3, "Even when the fool walks along the road, his sense is lacking, and he demonstrates to everyone that he is a fool." So these first three verses talk about very small things that can lead us astray, or very small things that can derail our lives in some very big way eventually. Now, he talks about finding dead flies in a perfumer's oil. Now, a perfumer could be, in other translations, an apothecary or a confectioner, but whether you interpret it one way or the other, the point that he's getting at is that the perfumer provides something good, something beneficial, a balm to someone living in an arid environment. And that perfumer's oil, something that's normally seen as good and beneficial, suddenly becomes very ugly and useless once you find a fly in it. And going back to the idea of finding the hair in your soup at a diner or finding a dead fly or something, you know, when you think about the whole bowl of soup, what's one hair compared to the total? It's just one hair. It's a very small thing, and it's not very hard to pull that hair out. But you know what is really difficult? Taking the first bite of that soup after pulling a hair out. That suddenly becomes some great ethical dilemma in your life. One small hair, one small fly ruins the entire bowl of soup when most of that soup didn't even come into contact with that human hair or that dead fly. So it is that a very small thing can ruin something larger. I'm reminded of what James says in the New Testament in James chapter 3, verses 3 through 6. He describes the way that the human tongue is this fire that sets everything aflame around it. The tongue is also kind of like the rudder on the back of a ship. Such a small part of that ship, one tiny piece of that ship compared to the rest of it. And yet that thing determines the direction of the entire vessel. So it is, the tongue is a very small thing amongst the members of our body. But it can dictate the course of our lives depending on how we use it. It can determine the direction of our lives. So it is that one small thing can change your life forever. So in verse 2, again, he says, "A wise man's heart." Again, that reminds me of James chapter 3 and the way the tongue can direct the course of our lives. Your heart is a very small thing, isn't it? I mean, literally speaking, your physical heart is a very small part of your body. But when you take it kind of the metaphorical sense, right, of the heart being the core or the essence of who we are, it still is a very small thing compared to the totality of you as a person. But your heart can determine where you go. The inkling, right, a sixth sense that you have about something. You know, we sometimes think of ourselves as being good judges of somebody else. I mean, we see that as a character trait, a quality that we see in someone. When you're interviewing, for example, or interviewing people for a potential position in a company, you've got to know in just the first 30 seconds what you think about that person, because an interview doesn't last very long. And that first 30 seconds can be a very lasting judgment of somebody. So it is with our sixth sense or our gut feeling about somebody or a first impression that we make about somebody. That's what our heart does. A wise man's heart directs him to the right, but a fool's heart directs him to the left. And the way that the fool walks becomes obvious to everybody, as it says in verse 3. And I love, by the way it puts it in verse 3, that the way a fool walks proves or demonstrates to everybody that he is a fool. Little things that we do in life, people will take those little things that we do and they'll build a character assessment of the rest of you. And I don't think that we have any right to say, well, that's not fair. Because you know what? We do the same thing to everybody else, don't we? We might take a very small part of the observable person, one thing that we've seen in an interaction with them. Maybe somebody cuts us off on the freeway. Or somebody treats us poorly in giving service at a restaurant. We don't like the way the customer service representative talked to us over the phone when we were trying to tussle with some big Fortune 500 company that wants more out of us in our bill. And we take one small thing, one interaction, and build an entire persona of that person. And we hate that person because of what? One really small part of their lives. And yet, even with that being said, in a lot of ways, you are exactly who you present yourself to the world. And if you walk out your front door and you act like a fool, don't be surprised or shocked or offended when people come to the conclusion that you're a fool. And if you only give people a little bit to work with, you say one foolish thing over here, that's a little bit to work with, but people will build an impression of you that's less than favorable because of that one impression that you give them. Now, what's the lesson? What's the practical application? You've got to be very careful with the person that you are. The way you present yourself, the way that you talk to people, you might have one opportunity to make a good impression on somebody. You might have one opportunity, maybe a few seconds of conversation, and they're going to determine what they think about you, and that's it, and your window closes. Now, that might make a difference in your personal evangelism. That might make a difference in your reputation with people. That might make a difference in how you present yourself as a Christian to the people around you. And if you have just one shot to leave an impression with someone, don't let people come to the conclusion that you're a fool because you wasted that one opportunity. The fool demonstrates to everybody that he's a fool because of how he acts. And just the way that he walks down the road, according to verse 3, just the way that he walks through life, he shows people who he is. So it's not unfair when they come to a conclusion about that. But what are some other very small things that leave a very big impact? Because we've looked at negative things so far, and I think there's some really positive ways that a process-oriented life can leave a good impression on people and leave a positive impact on who you are. So let's begin here in verse 4, and we'll go on down through verse 11, verses 4 through 11. If the ruler's temper rises against you, do not abandon your post, because composure allays great offenses. There's an evil that I have seen under the sun, like an error which goes forth from the ruler. Folly is set in many exalted places, while rich men sit in humble places. I've seen slaves riding on horses and princes walking like slaves on the land. Verse 8, he who digs a pit may fall into it, and a serpent may bite him who breaks through a wall. He who quarries stones may be hurt by them, and he who splits logs may be endangered by them. Verse 10, if the axe is dull and he does not sharpen its edge, then he must exert more strength. Wisdom has the advantage of giving success. Verse 11, if the serpent bites before being charmed, there is no profit for the charmer. And I would categorize these things as very small things that can help you. Again, that's the process-oriented life. When you focus on doing the little things that end up making a very big difference. So if the ruler's temper rises against you, now he doesn't say whether it's your fault or somebody else's fault, or maybe the ruler just had some negative impression of who you are, but for whatever reason, if the ruler's temper rises against you, you have two options, don't you? You abandon your post and you hide and you try to cover up whatever it was that you did or you're accused of doing. Or you stay at your post and take responsibility. Now, those are really the only two options at your disposal. Whether you think you're right or wrong doesn't matter. When the ruler's temper rises up against you, there is no reasoning with that ruler. If he's mad, he's mad. And you can think back in all of human history the way that rulers just let their tempers dictate how they treat the other people around them. Whether it's Sennacherib from Assyria, or Nebuchadnezzar from Babylon, or Napoleon in France, or Kim Jong-il in North Korea. When a dictator is in a bad mood, he'll have people's heads chopped off for nothing. Or at least what we might deem to be nothing. So when that ruler's temper rises against you, Solomon says, there's one little thing that you can do that just might save your skin. Stay at your post. That's a little thing, isn't it? That's a little thing that you can do. Just stay at your post and take responsibility. And you are much more likely to survive the day. You're more likely to calm down the ruler when you stay at your post and take responsibility than when you hide or run or try to cover it up. Because what do they always say about the man who runs? Running just makes you look guilty. Unless you're Harrison Ford in The Fugitive. We all knew he was innocent from the start. Running just makes you look guilty. But then he goes on to say here down in verses 8 and onward, he who digs a pit might fall into it. A serpent may bite him who breaks through a wall. Now, as you're doing work here in Arizona, we understand what it's like to encounter snakes. We know what it's like to find scorpions in your backyard or scorpions in your attic or in your garage. I found two black widows in my garage, and that's very disconcerting to me. Very disconcerting. And I'll tell you what, I pulverize them. There is no quarter when it comes to critters in my house. Now, I'm fine with them being out in nature because I don't own the rest of nature. But my house is my house. And if you're a black widow, be prepared to vaporize out of existence if you ever meet me. But the thing about it is, when you go out to your garage and you're getting ready to shift boxes around from one side of the garage to the other to do work over here, to organize something or get rid of things for a garage sale, whatever it is, when you're shifting boxes around, a little bit of alertness, and I mean it, just a little bit of awareness can make a huge difference between getting bit by something and not getting bit by something. Or getting stung by a scorpion and not getting stung by a scorpion. 3 seconds of scanning, right? When you move a box back, 3 seconds of looking. Okay, there's nothing back there. That can make a huge difference in life. And I think that's what he's saying in verse 8. When you dig a pit, if you don't want to fall into the pit, all you got to do is just look around. That's it. A little bit of awareness of, okay, I dug a giant pit over here, and I need to make sure that when I back up, I don't fall into my own pit. A little bit of awareness, right? Just a little bit of awareness. Verse 9, he who quarries stones may be hurt by them if he's not paying attention, or if you forget to put your helmet on. Wear safety equipment. 3 seconds of put my safety helmet on, put my reflective vest on. 3 seconds of preparation might save your life if you're working in a quarry or some other kind of dangerous job. 3 seconds of preparation, and that's it. And he who splits logs may be endangered by them. But then verse 10, if the axe is dull and he does not sharpen it, he has to exert more strength. A few minutes of just sharpening the axe changes the entire day's worth of work, doesn't it? All you have to do is sharpen the axe for a few minutes, and you make the whole job that much easier. A little thing. Very small things that make a big difference to us. It's all about preparation. Or as they say in the kitchening world, mise en place, right? It's all about making sure that you've got everything ready to go, that I've diced what I need to dice, I've chopped what I need to chop, I've got all my ingredients laid out and ready to go, so that when something's boiling over, I don't have to run back to the pantry and say, I forgot to grab garlic powder. You're ready to go. A little bit of preparation goes a long way in everything that we do, my friends, in everything that we do. Now, if it's that important when it comes to sharpening an axe before chopping wood, or moving boxes in your garage, or prepping before you cook something in your kitchen, how much more do you think that applies to our spiritual lives? I wonder if 3 minutes of prayer in the morning will make the difference between you enduring that day's challenges and not enduring that day's challenges. Reading a few verses before you leave. How about taking 5 minutes out of your hour-long lunch break to help somebody else or to care about somebody else, to pray, to meditate, to take a few quiet moments to reflect on the choices that you've made and the choices that await you for the rest of your day? How about worship on Sunday? I know compared to the rest of the week and the things that we do, we might work 40 hours in a week, but we'll spend 3 hours together on Sunday worshiping and studying. What's 3 hours compared to 40 hours at your job, or 60 or 70, depending on what you do for a living? 3 hours on Sunday might really make a huge difference. I say might. I don't mean it might make a difference. It will make the difference if you apply it correctly and you're really living it. A little bit of worship, a little bit of study, a little bit of meditation and self-reflection, that is what makes the difference between a strong Christian who endures his trials and a weak Christian who falls apart when things start getting difficult for him or her. But let's move on to some other little things, like little things that are really not that little, or little things that don't appear as little as they are. In verses 5 through 7, which we already read here, it says, there's an evil that I've seen under the sun, like an error which goes forth from the ruler, folly that is set in many exalted places, while rich men sit in humble places. I've seen slaves riding on horses and princes walking like slaves on the land. I believe that he means this in not a literal sense, that he doesn't literally see princes walking like slaves on the land and foolish people exalted to every high position. He means this in kind of a broader way. That when you look at people's inner qualities, their inner wealth, he has seen people who are spiritually, morally rich people, good and righteous people, holy people who are rich in heavenly riches in the eyes of God. And yet their condition in life, economically or physically or socially, is rather inferior to the idiots that are around them who seem to succeed in everything that they do. So he's not literally talking about rich people who have to walk like slaves. He's saying these kinds of rich people, the people who appear very poor, but in God's eyes are filled with heavenly treasures. And that's not fair. And we might kind of grouse and complain about that, but he says that's simply the way it is in this world. You know, I mentioned Kim Jong-il a few minutes ago, and I don't mean to pick on North Korea's dictator or anything, but, you know, he kind of asks for it, doesn't he? It's Kim Jong-il or Kim Jong-sun or their entire family, okay? That entire family of crazies, they ask for it, don't they? And I don't even claim to imagine what it would be like to live in a country like that. I can't even claim to imagine that. What it would be like to live at the whim of an immature fool who simply follows his emotions, whatever they happen to be that day, who's always looking to pick a fight with anybody around him, and who honestly believes that, well, that he can win those fights. And your life then is affected by the whims of that fool. And history is filled with people like that. It's filled with people like that who didn't deserve to be king, who didn't deserve to have power, who didn't deserve to have wealth. But Solomon says here in Ecclesiastes 10, it simply is what it is. And here's the thing about it. The really big people in this world, the movers and the shakers, the dictators, the people with all the physical wealth, they might actually be very, very small people, petty, immature, fools. But the truly important people in this world, in God's eyes, maybe we occupy the bottom rung of the social ladder. Maybe we're relegated to the bottom spot. But it's those people who truly hold value in God's eyes. So sometimes things that are very small are not what they appear to be, and sometimes things that are very big are actually quite small. But then he talks about very small things that can escalate into really big things. Sometimes we talk about a snowball, which we live in Phoenix, so what are you going to say, right? Let's say you go to Flagstaff, though, or Tahoe. I think we're all familiar with it, at least in some theoretical sense, right? That you make a small snowball at the top of a hill and then you roll it down that snowy hill. And what ends up happening by the end of it? Well, that small snowball balloons into something so much bigger. Little things that can escalate and turn into big things. So he begins here in verse 12. Ecclesiastes 10:12. Words from the mouth of a wise man are gracious, while the lips of a fool consume him. The beginning of his talking is folly, and the end of it is wicked madness, and yet the fool multiplies words. That's, by the way, one of my favorite verses in all of Ecclesiastes. It's funny and sad at the same time, isn't it? You know, you want to chuckle at it at first, but then you go, oh, he's right. He's really, really right about that one, isn't he? The beginning of the fool's talking is folly, right? That's bad enough, isn't it? You know, we talk about things that go from bad to worse. The beginning of his talk is folly. That's bad enough. And then the end of it is wicked madness. So you know you're in a bad situation when things start as folly and they end as wicked madness. And yet, what verse 14 says, yet he continues to multiply words. We've all been in that situation too, haven't we? I know that we can think about the times in our lives where we can think back and say, I should have just shut my mouth. But then you keep talking and you keep talking and you keep talking. And what's the old thing, right? Digging a hole for yourself, right? Digging a hole for yourself. And we know we need to shut our mouths and be quiet, but we can't seem to do it. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. It starts as folly. It ends with wicked madness. And yet you keep multiplying words. Something small. One little lie. A white lie. No one's going to find out. What's the big deal? One white lie. But then you've got to remember it. And then you've got to remember the next lie that you tell to cover up your bases. But then you've got to keep track of all the lies that you've told. You've got to keep your story straight. Or how about David? On that sleepless night, maybe it was a little too warm that evening, he needed a cool breeze, he goes out on his patio, and what does he see? He sees a woman bathing. One little thing, right? One mistake, one look, one lustful thought. And boy, did that snowball, didn't it? That snowballed perhaps as much as any other story in the Bible of the escalation of sin. That story snowballed down the hill. I can't imagine what it was like for David, by the way. I do feel some sympathy for him. In a way, I'm not sympathetic because he brought it on himself, but in a way you feel some sympathy for David because I think we've all been in that situation where we do tell that one lie, we do have that one lustful thought, and before you know it, a couple days later, you're going, how did this turn into this? How did this blow up in my face so astronomically? How did I find myself in this position? Well, it all started with that one little thing that escalated. So he goes on to say in the rest of the chapter here, beginning in verse 15, the toil of a fool so wearies him that he doesn't even know how to go to a city. That's sad, isn't it? Remember here, in the context of the way Solomon is writing, you had to work hard to not find a city. They didn't just have roads that went off to nowhere. If you got on a road, that road eventually led to a city. Cities were the center of things, right? Roads, game trails, whatever you found. If you found a path with human footprints on it, you would eventually find a city. You have to work hard to not find a city. Maybe in modern vernacular, it's talking about someone who gets on an interstate. If you get on an interstate freeway, what will you find eventually? You will eventually find civilization. A fool has to work hard at not finding a city. Verse 16, woe to you, O land, whose king is a lad, whose princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, whose king is of nobility, and his princes eat at the appropriate time for strength and not for drunkenness. A little thing, right? What's the little thing he's talking about there? Making good choices when it comes to your diet, your daily routine, your schedule. You know, in the military, they always make you start off the day by making your bed. I've always appreciated that. And I live in a family of people who don't like to make their beds. But there's something about starting off your day. The very first thing that you do is organize something. You set the tone for your day. Having a pressed shirt ironed, ready to go. A little thing like that. How you make your schedule up. How you conduct yourself first things first in the morning. How you start your day on the right foot. A little thing that makes a huge difference. And he goes on to say in verse 18, through indolence or laziness, the rafters sag, and through slackness, the house leaks. That's what houses do, right? You ignore them long enough and eventually they start to fall apart. You got to repaint houses. You got to replace the roof every now and then. Air conditioners break. Window seals break. Door seals break. Every year you have to go spray for weeds, don't you? Or they crop up again and again and again. Every year you have to spray for scorpions and black widows, or they come back again and again and again. But through laziness, a house falls apart. A little bit of work would have saved the day. Men prepare meals for enjoyment, and wine makes life merry, and money is the answer to everything. I think the little thing there is the little thing of summing up life in easy ways. Taking the easiest path through life, the path of least resistance. Furthermore, in your bedchamber, do not curse a king. And in your sleeping rooms, do not curse a rich man. For a bird of the heavens, a little thing, a little thing. Remember that old phrase, a little birdie told me? That's where it comes from. Whenever you hear someone say, a little birdie told me, it comes from Ecclesiastes chapter 10. For a little bird of the heavens will carry the sound, and the winged creatures will make the matter known. So a little bit of discretion would have saved you from trouble. Just like a little thing, like a little birdie, will carry that gossip on to the next person. Little things, my friends. Watching college football yesterday, you see little things happen throughout a game. Little things like being just 1 inch shy of the goal line. Little things like making sure that one toe gets in bounds when you're catching a ball along the sidelines. Little things like, was his knee down when the ball came out of his hands? Little things, my friends, little things that end up making the difference between victory and failure. If you're not a Christian here, there's one really big thing that you can do. It's a big thing, but it's very simple. Become a Christian. Become a Christian and embrace God's grace that forgives you of all sins, and accept the welcome into the heavenly abode at the end of this life. Mark 16, verse 16 says, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. So whatever spiritual need you might have at this time, please let it be known by coming forward as we stand and sing.